You're going to train a celebrity or a professional athlete eventually. Almost all of them do. So you have to be ready for that. So even if you just started training yesterday, don't let the world's greatest athlete come in, just pick you out for some random reason and say, hey, can you train me today? Even if you know for a fact it's going to be one session, but you can produce that for the athlete and say, and the athlete's like, oh, I've never heard that before. And then you can prove it, and then you execute it. Here's how you squat. Doesn't hurt your knee, doesn't hurt your back. That makes a huge impact.
This is episode 105 of the Neuro Experience podcast. I'm Louisa. I'm your host. Today's guest needs no introduction. He's the OG of biomechanics, and he's making waves in the industry. Donnie Raymond, part owner in DBC over in Miami. He is the personal biomechanist to LeBron James. For those of you who don't know what that is, it's a specialist in human movement who combines biology and physical mechanics. Donnie is the man who helped LeBron overcome his back problems back in 2015. Donnie was a Navy SEAL for 15 years and became a disciple of biomechanics when he used the science to help himself get over a severe neck injury suffered during a parachute jump that Navy doctors struggled to heal. Today, we'll cover what biomechanics is, why you need to put your head down in the books and learn the science and mechanics of movements if you want to succeed and get results for your clients, how he helped build DBC, his thoughts on neuroscience, and the future of sport. If you're listening to this and find value in the episode, please leave a review and tag your Instagram name. It helps push the podcast along and it helps build community. Let's get into the episode. Donnie, welcome to the Neuro Experience podcast. I'm so excited to have you on here. I just had your business partner, Dave, probably about 2 months ago. The episode went viral. Everybody loves Dave, but I know that I had to bring you on here as well. And today I'd love to get into a lot of the science behind it. We're going to get to know you, you know, what you studied, how you got to this genius level that you are now that everybody looks up to. And we're going to get into the science behind biomechanics and the DBC system. So I'm going to
Sure. I was previously, before I got heard of biomechanics, I was in a Navy SEAL for 15 years, and I sustained a neck injury from a parachute accident. So I went through about 8 months of physical therapy, and my neck was just getting worse and worse, and I was on limited duty. So then a friend of mine said, hey, there's an institute in San Diego you should visit. They kind of specialize in this stuff. So I was like, sure. So I went. And they solved the problem in my neck pretty quickly. And when I went back to the medical clinic, and in the SEAL team we have an extensive orthopedic clinic, I went back to the medical clinic and they were like, what did you do? And I said, oh, I went to this institute. And they said, sure, we've heard of that place. And in the SEAL teams, they will very often send a SEAL out to learn something from the civilian population and bring it back if they think it's valuable to the community. So they signed me up for the class. And they let me in just because I was a SEAL. Usually you had to be a medical professional. But I was still on active duty. I had no intention of getting out of the military ever. So while I was during one of their classes, the instructor asked a question about shear forces in the cervical spine. And I answered it because as I was a field engineer in the SEAL teams. And they said, oh, how do you know that? I said, oh, I'm a field engineer. And they were, oh, pulled me aside and said, you need to go into biomechanics. And at the time, I'd never heard of it. So I looked into it and I was like, oh, wow, I like this.
Wow.
So I, at about my year 15, I was like, I'm going to go in the civilian world because I was getting older. And I was like, I don't want to, I just spent 8 months in Afghanistan. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore at 40 years old. So I got out. Funny, I actually tried to get into MIT to finish off my engineering degree and I didn't make it. But as a SEAL, when I they usually let military people into like MIT and Harvard. So I actually became friends with the senior mathematician for the Center for Advanced Engineering Studies at MIT, and he started taking me through the basic mechanical engineering courses so I could get up to speed and then reapply. And then after he got a grasp on what we did in biomechanics, he was like, you don't have to finish this. So it's like when it took physics, we wanted classical mechanics because that's the physics of the body, the way the body works, Newton's laws, things like that. When you get it more advanced, they start talking about electricity and magnetism, and he's like, you don't need that for what you do. And I was like, well, I want to finish off. And he's like, you're 42 years old. Why? So I actually just through his tutorials and guidance, took the first 2 years of mechanical engineering courses from MIT and with the tutor. Mm. And then when we opened DBC, we knew how much engineering was involved in biomechanics. It's many considered a discipline. So that's when we brought in Jared. He's a former mechanical engineering professor. He's got his bachelor's in aerospace engineering and his PhD in mechanical engineering. He was a professor. He worked for Sikorsky Helicopters. Now we have the senior biomechanist from NASA using our curriculum. Great guy. It's just, you know, like minds started to join. And I think our success at DBC has come from this biomechanics approach and the science of it. And it seems to be working.
The one thing that I absolutely love about what you've just said is you really do know what you're talking about. And I say that like in the sense that everything you're doing can be backed by science. And as a neuroscientist myself, I am a scientist by trade, and I believe in the science. I believe in, we've done trials, we've tested this, this is the system, this is how it works, we've tested it clinically on humans, and it works. So now we're going to go and put that into action, and that's what you are doing at DBC, and that's why I'm such big fans of you and Dave. Now, what I'm seeing right now in the industry, and, you know, you're a veteran, you can go and tell us what you've encountered, but what I see is that to go and be a personal trainer per se, you go and do a course, and I'm not sure where you go and do these courses, but it's like, come and do this course, it's a 2-day course, and I think it's just too easy. I think it's just too easy now to go and just be a personal trainer. I don't think that's enough. I think now that we're becoming smarter, we're getting more education in human development, human optimization. There's free education everywhere. Anyone can go on to PubMed. There's podcasts out there. So I think education definitely differentiates you. But one of the things that I think is most inspiring is the story that you told me about how you got started with Dave. And I want you to share that with everybody, how you got your start and how you guys made DBC what it is today. And it was a story about Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, actually, so when we first got started, David was actually a client of mine. So when David came to my clinic when I was on my own, and he had a herniated disc in his neck. And, David was a certified ATC, which is it's a 4-year degree in athletic training. Mm-hmm. It's like a physical therapy assistant kind of, but they've grown so much that they're actually competitive. So David came to me, and he actually brought one of his clients to me, and then he asked me, hey, can you take a look at my neck real quick? And I said, what's wrong with your neck? And he said, oh, I've been diagnosed with a herniated disc. So I showed him the leader in herniated disc recovery and things like that is Robin McKenzie. He's a PT. I showed David the self-help that McKenzie is the McKenzie method on how to fix his neck, and his pain literally left his neck before he left my office. So the David told me later on, he said when he every intention of opening up his own gym, he said he just made a mental note, like, if I ever open up a gym, I'm partnering with this guy, Donnie. Mm. So I went away to L.A. on a contract to work with a boxer, but it got to, as soon as David opened DBC and announced it, he called and said, hey, do you want to come do this? And I was like, yeah, sure. And it was always my intention to have a certification course and teach biomechanics to the masses, so it made perfect sense, and I knew David was already extremely popular working with Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, all these other people already. So it was a good fit because he's the charismatic, popular guy, and I'm
preferred. It's the eyes.
He's a good-looking guy. That's why I wanted to. I was like, this is a good partnership. Like, my weaknesses are his strength, and vice versa. So what happened? DBC. We started DBC. It was very small at the time, and one of the first clients, Dwayne Wade, came in, and he said, "Hey, I want you guys to take a look at me." So David had a look at him, and we're doing a standard orthopedic assessment, but we're not using it to diagnose injuries. It's kind of just a tune-up, a checkup for your car. Are the tires straight? Is the wheel crooked already? Is the frame bent? You know, is anything wrong with this? It's a very general assessment just to make sure everything's in working order and the joints are tracking in the right way. So Dwayne was a little bit banged up. We did the assessment on him, identified his issues from the assessment right away, and then pointed it out to him. And he was furious that some of these things didn't get picked up on. Tried to calm them down because there were things that outside of biomechanics you might not notice. So it wasn't really that big of a deal. But then we just went back and taught them the general motor programs that we teach everybody, because what our system is about is making people better functioning human beings. And usually you get an increase in athletic performance from that. So we actually have to spend a lot of time that way. Mm-hmm. And then that summer, I only worked with Dwayne for a few weeks, then turned him back over to David. And he had one of the best seasons of his career, but not to take credit for what he did on the basketball court. You know, we're just saying, hey, look, he had some issues. We freed up his body to work like his brain wanted it to, and he just went crazy.
Mm. So question, did he come to you with an MRI, with a CT, with like what was happening in his body that he could present with you?
Yeah, no, most of his problems were knee and shoulder.
Okay.
So mostly we'd only need a CT or an MRI, yeah. If it was spinal,
yeah.
Someplace where you can't touch and feel and look.
Yeah.
So no, he didn't have any of that, but the assessment, he had some known biomechanical issues that were obvious, and they weren't hard to fix. I mean, when you're realigning structure, you can adjust the tension of the muscles, and you can adjust where the bones are by the tension of the muscles. So you just want to balance that out so there's a little bit of symmetry, and joints move the way they're supposed to move.
So you started off with Dwayne, and then obviously when you have somebody with that much, you know, influence, you're going to do it, and you do a good job, they're obviously going to go around and tell people. So that's how it began. It started with word of mouth, because you produced the results. There weren't fake results. You produced the results, and then he went and obviously told people word of mouth, and now you've grown it into what it is today. And I think you're opening up, you've got two locations.
The other one's not open yet.
It's not open yet, but you'll be opening that one up soon. And what I find special is when I was in there a few months ago, I did the grand tour with Dave. You guys have got everything. You've got the latest technology. You don't buy technology that you don't see works for you. And you're all about having a functioning working body, and everything else just comes into fruition after that. So if we fix the biomechanics, then whatever you're aiming for, whether you're an endurance athlete, whether you're a powerlifter, whether you're a basketballer, that's just going to come into fruition. Now, for the people out there who want to get into biomechanics but don't really know what it is, you've developed a course, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Can you tell us about what this course is and what biomechanics actually is?
Sure. So biomechanics is actually an older science, but it kind of fell by the wayside for a long time. Most universities that were teaching biomechanics converted their tracks to biomedical engineering. So now most biomedical engineers are focusing on like heart stents, prosthetic limbs, things like that. So the research has really gone down in relation to sports. And there's not a lot of people getting into it these days. There's a couple of universities, American universities, that are still teaching a true biomechanics track. So like John Hopkins School of Engineering teaches the biomechanics course. If you go on to John Hopkins' splash page, it'll tell you people in the biomechanics track must master the fundamentals of mechanical engineering before they switch to the biological sciences. Purdue University is the same way. Theirs is a little bit more physics-centric. So, for example, there's a physics course called continuum mechanics. A lot of people never heard of it. That's a prerequisite before you start the biological sciences and the mechanics of materials, like what ligaments are made out of and tendons are made of, you know, kind of like that. So that's really, and even the university don't teach it anymore. Their tracks are still coming from the schools of mechanical engineering. So the engineering fits the biomechanics through classical mechanics and continuum mechanics as a science. And it's not perfect because the human body is ridiculously complex, I'm telling you. But that's kind of how it works. So a lot of people get introductory biomechanics courses, and they don't understand it's introductory biomechanics until they're introduced to it later. So the course we wanted to design is, like right now, a lot of the universities, they'll give an introduction to biomechanics courses, but they'll, like when you took algebra, it was a very watered-down version of the mathematics. They'll give people some basic math to do, like solving Pythagorean triangles and things like that, which is an integral part of mechanical engineering when you're solving vectors.
Yeah.
But it gets a little bit more complicated when you're doing 3D vectors because of the human body. All our joints are round, if you will, ball and sockets and hinge joints. They operate in angular motion, but we move across the ground in linear motion. So when you have to convert those things when you're doing research. So there's a lot of engineering concepts in it, which you have to have the physics to be an engineer. You have to have the mathematics, 3 years of calculus, some linear algebra, which is a post-calculus course, a lot of advanced things like that. Now, that's great if you're going to be a researcher, but we can teach these concepts. So some the basic concepts, we're just teaching those concepts now so people can read papers on their own. So we're teaching people the difference between a scalar and a vector. We're teaching the people between the difference between distance and displacement, speed and velocity. We're teaching just a very vocabulary-based curriculum that way. But then once they learn those and they start to learn the mechanics of the movement, we take them into the gym and we're teaching them the mechanics of the squat. So we're teaching them the mechanics of the lunge, bending, pushing, pulling, the seven kind of mainstream general motor programs that I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah.
So, but most courses aren't teaching that. They'll teach them, how do you calculate the spin of a basketball, which is important as a start, but that's not helping trainers. So what our course is focusing on is teaching the biomechanics concepts to trainers, physical therapists. We've had medical doctors come through. We have tons of engineers come through. Because of my work with like Dwayne and LeBron and the other NFL guys, I've become popular amongst the nerds. So we've had mathematicians come through the course. So we're kind of teaching them how to apply the science to the everyday movements, what they're doing in the gym every day with their clients, not calculating the spin of a tennis ball or golf ball, things like that. So very hands-on, practical work. Yeah, and I think that's where David always says we're trying to change the industry.
Yeah.
Because like you mentioned, you can go get a personal training certificate. You can get it online.
Mm.
Pay your $500, watch the videos, take the test, right? So there's not a whole lot of regulation on it. So we're just trying to boost that up a little bit, and hopefully people will start raising their own bars and start saying, hey, we've got to do more of this.
Both an introductory program, I believe, and then you've got an actual level one. Is that correct? Have you got two programs that you do?
David teaches a principles of a trainer.
That's it.
Course. That's an introduction to training.
Okay.
But he goes a little deeper because we just had an article come out. It said only 1% of gym owners are actually successful, and they close down. So David gives a very good insight as a gym owner, like how to structure your rent cycles for your other trainers, whether you take them on as employees or keep them as contractors. Unbelievably, you would think this would be necessary, but he teaches trainers how to conduct themselves. You know, it's okay to pull out your phone in this day and age and take a video of your client, but like, don't just stay on your phone the whole time. If you're taking a video for the Instagram, the clients like it. When I first met David, I tried to get him to put tint on the windows so people couldn't look in, but he was like, what are you, crazy? And then these guys walk in with their phones out all the time. So So that course, how to conduct yourself in a session, take a shower, how to charge your clients. People hate asking for money. You have to get over that as a business owner. Because, he points out things like, when you go to an office and you go to the front desk and you go, that's $50 for your session, you whip out your credit card and pay it. So your clients don't care when you ask them for money. But people are shy, and it's a taboo thing. So he goes into all that, how to get your monthly income consistent so you don't make $1,000 one month and $5,000 the next, and you're $6,000 for 2 months, which isn't bad. But he just talks about strategies like that. So that's the principal trainer introductory course.
I want to go into my passion, okay? And I want to get your insight on the neuroscience of training. Now, neuroathletics started 5 years ago now. We started in Australia. We came to LA now, based in and headquartered in New York. And we're really interested in, we started off with athletes, really interested in understanding whether it's post-concussion, understanding even like the psychiatry of some athletes and what they're going through on a day-to-day basis, and how can we change their performance by changing their brain. And I'm not talking about mindset. I know right now there's a big love for this word mindset in the world. I don't think a lot of people understand it. I'm actually trying to coin this new term called brain set, meaning that the mind is what the brain does, and how can we have a proper functioning brain from people who are registered neurologists, neuroscientists. How can we train our brain to make it more physically fit so we can overcome the mental endurance that we face in a basketball game or in a soccer game or in an NFL game? Because what I see now with talking to athletes one-on-one, there's a physical component. Yes, you have to be physically fit. You have to have a proper functioning body, and your joints need to be healthy. However, what are we doing with the brain? What are coaches doing with the brain? Now, the Bleacher Report, they just put out an article about 4 months ago saying as of 2020, it's going to be mandatory by law that every single team on the NFL has a registered psychologist or psychiatrist or neurologist on board that can actually help them. And I, you know, when I was doing interviews like 4 or 5 years ago, I used to say every team is going to have this, and now we're just moving on to it. And I'm excited. So I want to get your take on the mental aspect of athletes, sport, and the neuroscience behind it.
Yeah, no, that's perfect timing, because the NBA already just required it this year.
Oh, fantastic.
But the beauty of it is that when I was in the SEAL teams, there was an Olympic Training Center in San Diego. So the head psychologist there was Wendy Berlabi. Now, she's now with the Chicago Bulls. But she's been there for 3 years now, so she was like the pioneer in it, and she gives these talks. What they used to do is the Olympic Training Center would bring the athletes in, and we'd put them like through a SEAL hell day. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the SEAL teams, they have the hell week. It's 1 week no sleep. They just beat the bejesus out of you. Mm-hmm. and try to make you quit. So we would take these teams there, and it's a very team building. Everything's about teamwork. So she would come to all these things. So I became very good friends with her. And she's in that field already and dealing with the athletes and things like that. And we talk about everything. Mm-hmm. I've recommended her to some sports teams that had some issues like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like you said, it's a mindset, it's brain set. But I don't think that means what people think it means, especially if they don't understand what's going on. But and it's funny now because we have, his name's Adam Wright. He's Jerry Seinfeld's trainer. Mm-hmm. His PhD is in psychology. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to bring a course out. So, but when we talk about, the brain goes through, but from our perspective, what we're seeing basically in the gym every day is there's people have neurological dysfunctions, and that affects them dramatically. Mm-hmm. So we recently had an NBA player who's been, his left leg has been injured for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. So we found his injury, solved the physical injury, but he developed a motor engram, which is like a subset of a general motor program. He would never jump off his left leg anymore, even though he could do one-legged exercises. So we were like, listen, you're in the NBA. You can't be coming around a pick and roll and not use your left leg. Mm. And he was doing it. He was getting away with it because he was so good. And he was getting frustrated with it. He's been frustrated with it for years. Mm. So we did a lot of single-leg things. And the change in his personality when he could use his body the way he wanted to was he was like a different person. Mm. And then we've seen that with a lot of guys. So a lot of guys, we had another NBA come in, chronic injuries for years, and he was always depressed. He just thought he was being punished for some reason, like God was punishing him, and that's why he's always injured. So, and this was actually a player who got press after being with us, and he credited David for his psychological well-being because David broke him out of the rut and said, no, this is not normal.
Yeah.
You're fine. Right? So then he kind of was like, hey, this is not my life. This isn't the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So we did that. And, you know, I talked to Adam about it, and I talked to Wendy about it, and, you know, asked these guys if they wanted to talk to her. And it helped a lot. So, and especially when Kevin Love came out and had his things going on. So these athletes, I think it's starting to come out, and some of them may not want to go see a professional. But if, you know, we're just aware that the professionals are out there and we kind of know what the professional's doing, we can kind of introduce them to it and say, hey, this is not a taboo thing. This works.
It's interesting that you say that, because some of us are, you know, there are a lot of people out there who have got you know, they're suffering maybe a trauma and they don't think that it's affecting their mind and their brain. And then over time, what happens is you keep thinking a thought, you know, it keeps piling on and piling on and piling on. Then 5 years later, you may go to a psychologist or a psychiatrist and say, I'm depressed. And then they give you a pill and they say, here's your pill, here's your Prozac, just go and take that. And instead of dealing with the issue, we had a girl who was told that she couldn't get pregnant. She was 39 years old and, you know, she just lost all hope and it was affecting her marriage. And she just happened to come in for a foot problem. And, you know, and she said, you know, I'm always miscarrying. I keep miscarrying at the 9 week mark. And it was interesting. And then after seeing a neurologist, what they found is that she's got a pinched nerve in her left foot. Now, this nerve is the one that innervates during the cycle of pregnancy and actually provides blood supply to the fetus at 9 weeks. Isn't that incredible? So what we could do is we could find out which nerve was being pinched. We could unblock it for her, help her with that, give her a nerve block, and then obviously take care of it. And then you can allow blood flow during that 9 week phase. But if you don't go to a proper person, if you don't go to somebody who's well known or who knows about the nervous system, who knows about the, you know, neurological system, how are you going to get that? And then you go throughout your life thinking, I'm barren, I'm, you know, and affects your mind. So I think that's the same with sport. You know, you go through an injury, you may have an ACL reco and it could affect you in so many different ways, but you just will never know. That's why I'm so happy that you and Dave are out there providing people with the foundations, with the course. What's some of the advice you can give to people who are, you know, I spoke about this today, so I'm going to go off track. There's a lot of gimmicks now, you know, going around in New York City, you know, and LA, you know, go and do this class. And it's a gimmicky thing, you know, lights and cameras. And I don't think it's providing the foundations of a well-structured body. But what's your take on this whole gimmicky exercise classes that happen?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think we're stuck with it because it's not a new thing.
Yeah.
It's been going around for a long time. But, you know, when you start integrating health and wellness with business, right, there's a lot of gym owners and trainers out there that every time they're out there promoting a class or trying to get people to come to the gym, it's marketing 101. It's never about getting the results. So you never hear them saying, there's how to sell more t-shirts, how to book more clients, how to use Instagram to make money and get sponsorships. So I think a lot of those people aren't respecting the proper science behind everything, or they're more concerned about making money and running a successful business, where in my opinion, if you're going to get the results, you're going to get the clients. Mm. So I think that's a way to do it. And it's mostly word of mouth. So if you're going to have classes, they're going to come and go. Things keep coming around. So some of the latest fads were popular a long time ago. And a lot of things comes out of the medical community that people try to transfer into the personal training business. So like vibration therapy, like the power plates came out, right? So there's a known medical usage of those vibration plates. But what happened is instead of doctors and physical therapists using those to stimulate muscles and joint proprioception, things like that, people started coming out and going, oh, you burn way more fat on the force plate than you do, like doing push-ups on a force plate burns 800 more calories than it does if you're not doing on the force plate.
Yeah.
Right, that's impossible.
Yeah.
Which is why the force plates aren't around anymore. So you're going to get caught eventually.
Yeah.
So the same thing happened with those cryo machines, right? They make you feel good, but you're in
the cryotherapy for
in like sub-zero temperatures for 3 minutes and you get out and you feel great.
Yeah.
Well, sure, when you jump in the cold water, you come out exhilarated because that's an adrenaline rush. But you're not in there long enough for that cold to penetrate past your skin and get into your joints. And then I saw and said, oh, 3 minutes in the cryo chamber burns 800 calories. It's like, no, these things get found out, but people, you know, the guy who wrote the study on the power plates fudged the study on the calories, and he was an MD. He got paid $300,000 for the study, and he got his medical license pulled. So it's some people read that and go, oh, this is the new great thing, and everybody wants the new great thing.
Yeah, I think, look, it's hard to get past that. Everybody wants to be relevant. Everybody wants to be on Instagram. Everybody wants to be the new hot thing, and it's hard. I admit it's hard to just sit back. And I believe that, you know, that, you know, produce results by, you know, head down, ass up, just get into it, don't worry about everything else. I think it's really hard to maintain both. But when you're trying to maintain both, when you're trying to look good, have the best aesthetics, be popping, be, you know, have everyone around, it's really hard to produce the results. But it's like, what do you choose? And it's a scary thought. It's like, well, if I just go in and not tell anyone and just go focus on the results, then I'm not going to get bigger. People aren't going to know about me. So there's this, it's a scary thought for some people. And I see a lot, you know, I went to a fitness class not too long ago. It's the new thing in New York City. You go there and then you walk out and people are drinking, you know, maybe a glass of wine afterwards. It's like, and the wine is actually, the bar is actually inside the fitness studio. And I didn't understand that. It was like, you walk out, it's like they're holding a, you know, a vodka. It's like, I don't understand. I just got off the treadmill. So look, it must be, look, I'm an Australian, must be the new thing that's happening. So that's why I admire you guys. What's some of the advice that you can give out there for fitness trainers who look up to you and Dave? They want to be doing what you guys are doing. They just want to focus on the results. What's some advice you can give them?
Yeah, be patient. So most personal trainers, even the low-level ones, not that, don't mean as an insult, you're going to train a celebrity or a professional athlete eventually. Almost all of them do. So you need to get ready for that. If you want to make your big break, you're going to have to get the results. Now, if you're getting a young kid, college kid, like we don't have a lot of those because we've started to become known for, like all our, like when we're getting our athletes in, they're like 13-year veterans, right? They've had trainers, physical therapists their entire lives. You have to show them why you're right and get the results. So if you have a 17-year veteran coming in who's had back problems, you're like, hey, you need to squat. Like, I don't want to squat. Well, that's a fundamental movement pattern. Mm-hmm. You have to squat, right? How do you get on the toilet? How do you get in and out of the car? Mm-hmm. You have to squat. So when you can show them how to squat, and it's different than what they've been told for the last 25 years through their college strength coaches and their pro strength coaches, trainers, physical therapists, everybody and their brother, and they do a good squat, and it doesn't hurt, and then they feel great when they walk out of the gym. That's the impact you're going to have to make. So you have to be ready for that. So even if you just started training yesterday, don't let the world's greatest athlete come in, just pick you out for some random reason and say, hey, can you train me today? Even if you know for a fact it's going to be one session, but you can produce that for the athlete and say, and the athlete's, oh, I've never heard that before. And then you can prove it, and then you execute it. Here's how you squat. Doesn't hurt your knee. Doesn't hurt your back. That makes a huge impact, right? And then if they post you on your Instagram and say, hey, this is a great trainer, guess what? You're going to be flooded with clients. So that opportunity is going to come to you eventually. Be ready for it. Don't say, oh, I got plenty of time, because you might miss your opportunity.
But you've got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, you have to know it. You have to know it. So if you, yeah, you can't be one of those trainers who took an online course and is like, oh, I know everything about training. You've got to study. You've got to go through it. Right, like during our class, the biggest thing is we provide mounds of evidence. Mm. And most people don't have access to those mounds of evidence. So some of these things, there's controversial topics in the fitness community that have been solved scientifically decades ago. And it keeps persisting because people don't have access. I came across an article that I actually posted. UC San Diego, which is a very nice school, said that 65% of their operating budget is spent on access to scientific databases. And part of the beginning of the article was that if you go to PubMed, which is just a bibliography, it's not an academic database, they only provide about 5% of the papers that they have reference to. And Google Scholar was about 14%. So you don't have the access, but the problem you run into is there's one database, JSTOR, that UC has. It cost them $45,000 to get access, and then it's $8,500 a year. That's only one. That doesn't include Science Direct. That's one out of like 50 databases. So for a major university, 65% of their budget is for access to information. It's like, that's crazy. So I tell our students, like, you know, we have access to these databases. Like, give us, well, I can get these papers for you. But it turns out when you show these papers, there are some people who are going on PubMed and they're getting a paper and they only have access to the abstract. And they read the abstract and then they post something about it. And it's kind of like the conclusion you just drew was was not the conclusion that the paper drew. Sometimes a scientific paper gives a hypothesis, tells you what the theory is, and then they disprove it in the paper. So it's that limited access. Mm. And then people don't have access. So basically tell people, don't trust anything. Mm. Don't trust anyone. If somebody says something in Instagram, social media, wherever, and they give a reference, go get that reference and read it and make sure it's there. Mm. Because the person didn't do it on purpose. They have limited access. They don't know any better. So they're publishing it, but it's wrong. Mm. It's factually wrong.
So you're saying that there is some wrong information out there just because it's peer-reviewed and it may come from PubMed, but are you saying that that's not just a reliable source? Because I know for me, when I was doing my master's and we were researching, our academic provider kept saying to us, make sure when you actually go and say something or when you look up something, make sure you can actually find it from 12 peer-reviewed. He just kept saying 12 peer-reviewed sources, 12 peer-reviewed. And there were some times where I'd find something, I'd look at a finding and I'd be like, okay, great, here it is in one publication, but it's only been in one or two. You can't really back it up by 12. That was his number. And he kept saying, if it's not by 12, I don't want to see it. Do you believe that?
Absolutely. There's a professor who's very strongly against peer review. He's a nuclear scientist at MIT. His name's Professor Strong. He's a hugely outspoken about peer review. It shouldn't be peer review. It should be superior review. Which is what we did here at DBC. So yeah. I had my mentor review the level one course, who was the senior mathematician at the Center for Advanced Engineering Studies at MIT. Mm. He reviewed it, so this is fine, right? And then now we have Jared, who works with us now, who's a PhD mechanical engineering professor. He's happy with it, right? So we've had superior review. Those guys are way beyond me. But if you don't interact in the scientific fields, right, like the neuroscience uses the rigors of the scientific method, right? Physicists, microbiologists, chemistry. Those are the major sciences that rely on that rigor. So a lot of those people make fun of the peer review process. They make fun of they call it p-value hunting. So a lot of mathematicians, they teach basic statistics to some of the I hate to call them soft sciences, but they follow a rigorous program, but it's not the scientific method. So some people, there's always going to be that competition. Mm-hmm. But some of them aren't using the mathematics. They're not getting they're not putting the information out there first. So, one of the reasons you can publish out there is, like, theoretical physicists will publish a theory, and they're relying on an experimental physicist to confirm it for them because they don't have those tools. So, when it goes through the peer review process, people think that's like a rock solid foundation. But a lot of studies, there's different types of studies. There's observational studies that haven't gone through the scientific rigor. It's just like, hey, I noticed this, I saw it in 10 people, and they publish it out there. Mm. But what that's really for, it's helpful to have an observational study, even if it was an experiment that was proven wrong, so I don't duplicate it. Mm. Or if I see a flaw in it, then I can go after it that way. So the whole peer review and the pressure to publish and the statistical p-value hunting, there's another thing in statistics, you can torture the numbers. If you torture the numbers long enough, you can get it to say whatever you want. That's a popular thing. If you're not around that all the time, I don't think you know that those things exist. So if you go tell a theoretical physicist with a PhD, like, oh, is your paper peer-reviewed? He's going to laugh at you.
Okay.
Yeah. Or if, oh, these two things are both statistically significant. And it could be true, except one could be better than the other. And I don't think those concepts are common knowledge.
What you've just outlined is my biggest fear. Walking around New York City thinking, who can I trust now to actually train me? And when you look, you're in the industry and you know that there is not many people who have this knowledge, because people who have this knowledge, like you, are out there, professors and doing things maybe in NASA. They're not really going out into the physical wellness space because, people think, well, you just need a 2-day training online course just to be, what they're doing. And so I love that. And this is why so many people say to me, who's your trainer? And I'm like, I don't have one, because I've only been in New York City now going on my second year. I haven't even spent 18 months here. And I'm a member at Equinox because it's close to my house. And there's so many trainers there that I look at and I'm like, I I can't trust you to be my trainer because I know what it takes. And I asked Dave, I said, send me to somebody here in New York City. Open up a DVC here in New York City so I can go. So I am looking for that person out there. What do you say about people who would come to you and say, well, you know, I'm a strength trainer, I'm a physical trainer, and look at the results I'm getting, and I didn't do a biomechanics course, but I'm producing results in my clients. What do you say about that?
Yeah, so we would question that with what type of results are you talking about? So, but at DBC, we don't just train professional athletes. We have normal, we have some just basic level trainers. We have a vegan bodybuilder. We have some people. We have a 13-time Ironman now, so he works with the endurance athletes. So when you talk about results, from a personal training perspective, they don't need to be a biomechanist. You just have to know enough nutritional value to get people to lose weight, what works best, what doesn't work best, and avoid things that are dangerous. So if you're going to teach people how to squat, make sure you know what the main issues would be with a squat. So there's doctors, there's medical professionals out there now saying, hey, don't squat, it's bad for your knees, right? So because people have hurt their knees squatting, right? It's a fact, it happens. But if you know why it happens, which is what we teach in our courses, say, okay, yes, squatting could potentially be bad if your knees, if this or that. And those things are avoidable. Same thing with the backs. Lots of people hurt their backs squatting. Lots of people hurt their backs deadlifting. But when you know the injury mechanism, you can avoid that. So there's some trainers out there, they know how to deadlift, they know how to squat, maybe they work out themselves. Maybe your level of success isn't how much they can deadlift, or even if they can deadlift or not, but they come in and say, oh, I want to lose weight. So you could say, oh, look at my client, came in here kind of chubby, now they have six-pack abs, lost 30 pounds, that's a huge success. But that's not going to really fly when you start talking about NBA player, NFL player, right? So you can have success amongst different disciplines of different types of trainer, that's great. But if you, in the course of trying to get somebody to lose 30 pounds, because that's all they want, then it's fine, and you change your diet and you get them going, but then you're like, oh, I like to have my people squat, and then they hurt themselves. I don't know how you can live with that. So you've got to be multidisciplinary nowadays as a personal trainer. You know, strength coaches, there's strength coach, strength, lift as much heavy as you can. Well, that was the discipline, and that was supposed to be about. People didn't really understand the mechanics at first. So you have to base results off of what you mean by that. So, and now people have to be multidisciplinary. Like, we have physical therapists on our staff. Like, I don't do physical therapy. The other trainers don't physical. We send that out because that's not our area of expertise. So I think you have to, if you want to be the all-around person, you've got to have collaboration with those people and get that side of it from somewhere else. And if it's outside, that's fine.
Thank you so much for this. This is going to be one of the best episodes we put out there when it comes to biomechanics. I see your crew coming up now, getting ready to go into session two, so we're going to leave you. But I want to ask you one last question. What's the future of DBC? Where do you see it going? And can we expect a New York City location?
I would expect a New York City location. Yes. There's been discussions of it. we've been discussing it with investors.
Yeah.
But problem we have now, DBC is still very young. This is only our fourth year. Might be fifth. I don't know. I've been away for a while. But that type of growth, we're having trouble keeping up with the demand. So we're having enough success with people. So one of our trainers, Jason, and this is no secret, he solved Jessica Seinfeld's back problem. And she blew us up on her Instagram. Yeah. We got 300 calls that day to the DBC main line in Miami from New York for people to, was there a DBC here already? And if not, could we send a trainer up there? Or do we have any DBC certified trainers here already? We couldn't meet that demand. So after that, we had to send three trainers from DBC to New York for the summer just to meet that demand. Wow. And one of our guys actually is here now full time, working with with Jessica and all her friends. Wow. So there's a demand for it. We don't have enough people to meet it.
Yeah.
But now we're certifying trainers now on the basic entry level squat, lunge, bend, push, pull, twist, mm-hmm. gait processes. So we have quite a few of those in New York now. So we can meet that demand a little better. But a lot of people, if you have an injury or serious biomechanical dysfunction, you're going to need to be level 2 certified, mm-hmm. and that course doesn't start till January.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited. Thank you for being part of the Neuro Experience.
No, thanks for having me.